You're listening to the Free Oromia podcast, dedicated to amplifying the voices of freedom. Thanks for tuning in to the Free Oromia podcast. Visit our website at freeoromia.org. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Team Free Oromia, and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Team Free Oromia. You can also give us a call on the Free Oromia podcast hotline at 430-755-0727 and leave us a voicemail asking us questions or giving us your feedback. Make sure you subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Hello, hello, dear listeners. Welcome to episode 14 of the Free Oromia podcast, a podcast dedicated to amplifying the voices of freedom. This episode is actually a continuation of the previous episode, episode 13. So if you haven't yet listened to that one, we recommend checking that out first. This one will make a lot more sense if you do. Without further ado, here is episode 14.
Previously on the Free Oromia podcast.
That is my dream for Oromia, but there's no way that's going to be possible with the Empire of Ethiopia standing on our throat.
The intention of Ethiopia, when it was built as a national, it started to be built as a national identity, was never to be inclusive, was never to be fair. And so we're asking something that does not have the desire in itself to change itself, to change. And that is just illogical.
Oh my goodness. I just wanted to pick up a little bit on a point that Jalragato made about, creating space for other nationalities in Oromia when Oromia is a sovereign nation, and that, that there would be a sort of need for thinking more creatively and establishing an idea of a national identity that is more inclusive and more sort of...
It's not that we would have to seek necessarily a more creative ability than what we already have. It's that it's assumed that we don't have it when naturally that's what we have and that's what we would create.
Right, yeah, exactly, Soreti. That's kind of the point that I wanted to come to. We wouldn't need to create it. It already exists. And if you look at Oromia today, you can see evidence all around you that already exists. If Oromia was genuinely a place that was so incredibly hostile for people who are not Oromo to live within, Ethiopia would not be existing today. Like, there are people of so many other nationalities who live peacefully, happily in Oromia, and they want to continue to do that. And that's why perhaps they have this fear of it not being possible if Oromia leaves the Ethiopian Empire. But what we're trying to say is, those of you who are already there and those of you who come afterwards, you will always be able to continue to live in as well a way as you are now. The only thing that we want is for Oromo people to also be able to do the same on their own land. That's what we want to get to. You will always be able to live peacefully, live happily, be welcomed, have freedom, enjoy the same rights and privileges and possession and whatever it may be as Oromo people in Oromia, because we are a people who inherently believe in equity and equality. We just want for those same things to be possible for us in Oromia too.
Jalango, that's just such a, it's a point people really need to get their head around, that it's, and I think we can really point to how true this is by looking at how much resources have gone into the propaganda of the last 2 years of trying to convince people that Oromia is unlivable for minorities. Like, that wouldn't be something so heavily invested in if it wasn't actually our strongest vantage point in terms of being able to advocate and seek sovereignty. And it's a tactic being used across Ethiopia. I don't know if you guys saw the Ethiopian Human Rights Commission. You all won't be able to see, but I put that in quotation marks, air quotation marks. Made a comment on some of the violence in Berishangul, and then as a side note in that same comment, I think there's a tweet or something, said, this is why it can't be an autonomous federal state. And then someone made commentary on it saying, why is the Human Rights Commission making that kind of political commentary?
Wow, right? I did not see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I think it's on Twitter.
That's insane.
And so this, it's telling. It's really telling that, and also it's telling that this, you know, this violence that, you know, minorities are experiencing that's being, that the public is being encouraged to perceive is because Oromos are anti-minority in Oromia, started it and has been inflamed, and the narrative around it has been created since I became to power, since the vision of, you know, no more autonomy has, you know, been politically centered in the country. So I think, yeah, that's people, I think, really need to pay attention to that connection, because it's, and the other thing I wanted to say is, it's a really fine line to speak into, because we've really been put on the defense because of how insane and aggressive this propaganda is. But there is a need to speak to the fact that minorities who've been living for generations in Oromia were located there on the idea that Oromos don't have the right to own land because they're inferior people. And so non-Oromos from different parts of what's now Ethiopia can migrate there, take land, subjugate Oromo people. And like that's the truth of how it happened. The conditions now might be far from that and different from that, but that's a truth we need to reckon with, right? And we can reckon with it in a just way, in a way that still aims to foster that inclusion, but is honest and is able to go through that truth-telling process. In that process is, I'll give you an example, like, Oromos are also experiencing subjugation on their land because of this. Just because they're a majority in the land, it doesn't mean they're not experiencing subjugation because of, you know, this diversity that exists. Because, again, the idea that was planted in people's minds when they came to Oromia was, this is your land, be more than it is the land of the Oromo person. There is no sovereignty that they have over this land. And so there are people I know who, you know, are still fighting for what is their ancestral land, to be able to farm on it today, from people who believe, actually, I have more right to this land than you. And that also, I think we were just talking about the why the economic question was lower on the list of needs for people. And it's very interesting, because when people come for why we shouldn't be talking about self-determinations or nationalisms or independence or any of that, they say, everyone's poor in Ethiopia, no one cares about this, it's just you diaspora folk who blah, 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 blah. But actually, the Oromo farmer in Oromia is marginalized because they're an Oromo poor farmer in Oromia, even if they are as poor as the Amhara farmer next to them. Because the Amhara farmer and the system catering to the Amhara farmer says, you have more right, even if it's not saying it explicitly now, which is basically saying it explicitly, but it is historically told, farmers of different ethnicities in Oromia, that you have more right to this land than Oromos do. So that, again, it's a really delicate space to talk into, because we've been put on this defense and we feel we need to promote that minorities will be safe, minorities will have rights. And this is just, you know, it's in policy, right? Like, if we're talking about the parties amongst the Oromo political spectrum that advocate for this independence, it's ingrained in policy. That minorities have access to land, and that they'll be just and it'll be safe. One other thing, point I wanted to make is how to deal with the loss of identity people will experience. Because again, part of the idea of nationalism is that it's an identity to which you belong. And I think a lot of people fear, where do I belong if Ethiopia disappears? And you know, non-Oromos, but also maybe Oromos, I don't know, right? But non-Oromos for sure, because there's also the question of Finfinne, where it's promoted that this is an ethnic-less space or city, right? And that at the heart of Oromia, if we talk about the independence movement, will reclaim its inherent Ababi Yuma, Harabi Yuma. And from that point, people wonder, how do I belong to this new national identity? And I think that there's, we need to speak to that fear. There is somewhat of a burden of responsibility that if we're advocating to change the entire paradigm that people relate to in terms of their sense of belonging and their sense of home. You know, there is a sense of there will be processes. There should be processes. We will advocate for processes that that mean you still have a home here, but the basic rights, the fundamental rights of the Oromo people and the Oromo's right to land can no longer be compromised. And also the importance of talking about Finfinne in terms of this independence and countering this narrative that it's ethnicless is that it's not ethnicless. The Oromo-speaking rural farmer cannot come into Finfinne and feel like it's ethnicless, right? And so that that privilege in that is visible, and that's also part of the other side need to recognize that that's the balance we're trying to reinstate, this natural order, and it can only really be possible if we're able to recognize collectively that this was a land that belongs to a people and needs to belong to that people again for it to belong to anyone else in any just or right way.
You know, it's what's on the reality and what's within people's perception is so far from one another. Because, you know, growing up, Oromos are made fun of being farmers. You know, botigama is one thing people would say to Oromo farmers, which means your boot stinks. Meaning they... basically, you're wearing boots because you're a farmer, and you're feeding the entire country because you have the capacity to do so. But you're being made fun of because of that. You know what I'm saying? You have to take the time to know what the truth is. And the truth is, Oromos have been living with other nations and nationalities peacefully for years. Other nations and nationalities have been flocking to Oromia because of the natural resources that Oromia has. So this is not something new. What's been happening, though, is like Jal Ragatu said, is Oromo people did not have the same privilege. These people that have come to Oromia have been taking advantage of and gaining. And to ask for that right is just. It is completely just and fair. So the future of Oromia will only be better for Oromos and non-Oromos with a sovereign Oromia. It will only get better. Because even in an oppressed Oromia, the Oromos have been accommodating. So imagine how more accommodating they would be as free Oromos. They have nothing to fear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a powerful point.
That really, really, really is, really is. And I just had one thought pop into my head, Jal Ragatu, as you were talking about the sense of fear that some people might have about losing a national identity when Oromia becomes sovereign and independent. The people who can perceive that kind of notion and experience that type of worry or fear, she must then also be able to recognize the reality that Oromo people are living right now today in Ethiopia. And not just Oromo people, but any nation or nationality that is not, let's face it, Amhara. They must be able to recognize that that has been the experience of all these peoples within Ethiopia since Ethiopia was founded or instituted. I don't even know what correct word to use to actually describe the
imposed.
Fact that it was forcibly imposed, right? Yeah, that it was forcibly created. So, you know, there has to be some give and take. And, you know, we can all fathom and totally accept the idea of us, for example, not being natively American or natively British or whatever it may be, but still be British as part of our identity, still identify as British, or identify as American, identify as Swedish, as Australian, as whatever it is. Nobody says that, no, you can't call yourself that. You can't be Swedish because you're not natively Swedish or because you're Black or because you're this or whatever. We can all fathom and accept these things. We can all align these ideas with each other and see how they can all encompass a person's identity. Why can't that be the same case in Oromia?
And Oromia is a national identity. Has more capacity to be what you just described than Ethiopia has.
Because exactly.
It's not founded
exactly.
on the back of an empire. It will not be founded
as an empire.
Yes. Precisely. Precisely. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny, like, Jal Ragatu, when you said, you know, how people try to refer to Finfinne as an ethnic-less city, That just really feels like the I don't see color of labels, honestly. But I mean, so we've kind of touched on, you know, some of the fears and reservations, but I wanted to jump back to our survey. And, you know, the next question was, what reservations do you have about a free, independent, sovereign Oromia? The most selected answer was, I worry that there will be war, followed by, I worry about the methodology and politics, and then I worry about where mixed people or non-Oromos will go. Much further down, about 15% of people said, I worry about the economic impact. 11% of people said, it seems impossible. Also, 11% of people said, I don't think it will solve our core issues. And then about 9% of people said, I worry about Ethiopia's future. So, you know, just hearing these responses and how, you know, how many people responded to these, what do you all take away from that? Or what would be your response to these counter arguments? Because outside of the survey, we often hear, you know, fighting for liberation and supporting Wobo is violent and therefore morally wrong, or we should, you know, strive for democracy and peace within Ethiopia. So the goal of our efforts should be democratizing Ethiopia, or the region will disintegrate into chaos if Oromia declares independence. You know, what are your thoughts when you hear these counter arguments? Do you have any response?
Yeah, so I want to attack or respond to the biggest one, which is Oromia will be in war. Oromia's borders are impossible to protect because it's large and geographically impossible to do so. These are the narratives that are being thrown, especially countering the independence position. But where in Oromia are we not at war right now? So how is it going to be any different? Mm-hmm. You know, you can't, you're going to tell me there's going to be more. I'm like, no, we're already at war in every part, whether it's the north, the south, the west, or the east, we are being attacked. So there's, you cannot tell me Oromia is going to be on war even more than she is right now. Oromia has been bleeding since the creation of this empire. So it can only get better. It can only be there will be less wars. I'm not saying the moment Oromia becomes a sovereign country that we have the solution for everything. But I'm telling you, you cannot put that fear of war inside me and my people so I don't become a free nation. You know, so yeah. that narrative, I think, doesn't work for me.
I think a better question would be, are we going to be at war until we achieve freedom, or are we going to be at war until either forever or until we are just completely subdued?
Exactly.
There's something to be said about the diversity of, I guess, war styles and what ethic the Oromo Liberation Army or Oranabilisimo Oromo root their practice of war in, and how this measures up to what people fear when they think about war. It is, and you know, I'm not just saying this because I'm a supporter or I believe that we have every right, it's a human right for us to be able to defend ourselves against the state violence. Objectively speaking, if one is able to look, first of all, beyond the propaganda being waged by the government now that wants you to think that that the Oromo Liberation Army are what they're not, and look at how they actually function, their code of conduct, it is one of the most humane approaches to warfare perhaps on the planet right now. And I say that confidently. And you see, like, and I think also a lot of the content that Oromo Liberation Army put out there is at a final rubble. And it's perhaps like the full picture, the full scope of how we do war and how we will do war until we're free is only accessible to perhaps people who understand the language. But, you know, again and again, like, fighters will say, commanders will say, we're at war because war was waged on us. Not at war because we love it. And it's when people love war, people love power, that human rights abuses occur, that when people are at war to subjugate and take and oppress, that human rights abuses occur. And that's really what people, I think, fear when they're talking about this fear of war. That we can't, because otherwise, people need to recognize that Africa would not be in the arrangement that it is without the exact same kind of liberation struggles that we're seeing Rwandanism or Oromo wage. And these liberation struggles today, though they do not exist, are celebrated as a quintessential part of how these nations were created and how they freed themselves, as Jalango was speaking of earlier, of this colonization. And why? Because just because we're not in the same era, we don't have variety of other groups participating in the same thing at the same time, there's that lack of normalization that people think that it's just not the time. Like, we're in a different time and place. Now we use dialogue. Now we, but we're not, as again, Jalango
mentioned. But do we?
Right, do we? Like, in Ethiopia, do we? Are we in the context? Like, Jalango, you know, go back, rewind, y'all, to be able to understand why the time for dialogue is not now. The time for dialogue is after you have freed yourself from the empire. So I think, that's really something people need to feel into. I think people just need to, there's a level of acceptance that needs to come with the fact that we're battling an empire. We're battling, an entity that refuses not to militarize against us. So what do you do, right? And even in that context, even against like absurd levels of like militarized state violence, if we looked at the way that we do war, you would feel nothing but proud. You would feel nothing but inspired. In fact, it's for me, it's a template as to how everybody should be doing war, right? The code of conduct that everybody should be taking into war. How you treat prisoners of war, when you attack, how you attack, what you teach your fighters about why they're there, right? What their motivation is based in.
Exactly. And I mean, anyone who states that nonviolence is the most appropriate approach or the most, morally sound approach or the most correct approach or violence is not the answer, in a context where the oppressor is employing every single form of violence that you can imagine to maintain power and to continue that oppression, is only playing into the narrative of the oppressor and is only working to cement the position of the oppressor. They are not doing anything to help the oppressed, even though they think that, even if someone may think that they are speaking up on behalf of the oppressed by saying that, violence is not the way forward and, we should have a nonviolent movement and try to avoid violence as much as possible. Saying those things or, perpetuating those ideas in a context where you are being violently oppressed is not helping the oppressed at all. It is simply helping to further their oppression. Because this idea of nonviolence is such a double standard. And I think I've said this in a previous episode, that it's a double standard that is enforced on the oppressed when they decide to fight back. And so we have to understand that type of narrative is not useful nor helpful to us when what we're facing is extreme violence in the type of oppression that we experience.
I think also what's been indoctrinated into us in like just our social conditioning is this really like singular idea of goodness. Right, and like what it means to be a good person and what it means to be a morally correct person. And morally sound and correct people, good people don't do war. And I think people are attaching that to their personal identities in a way that's not allowing them to see that goodness, a sense of like humanity, also is very much found in standing up to defend your sense of dignity and on a wing that is mm-hmm. being assaulted in every way possible. And so mm-hmm. what you said at the very, very, very beginning, Jan Maro, about this process of liberation is not just an outward process, it's also an inward process. And there is an internal reckoning that people need to step towards to accept that in our context, if we're thinking and feeling contextually, then the good thing to do, the right thing to do, the peace-loving thing to do is to defend our people and to fight, to live in a way that, you know, is respecting of our humanity. And there's nothing that about that that makes you any less of a morally sound person or whatever. And it actually encourages you to be able to apply decency and morality every step of the way because you're being challenged. And I think that if we really apply this fear of war to our context, our liberation front do this. They really are critical and sensitive about this in a very, you know, difficult context where people, like if we're straight about it, people die in war. You choose, you make the choice to kill people in war, right? And people, I think, struggle to come to terms with the fact that such choices can be made from a place of reflection, can be made from a place of critically analyzing, why we must do this, what the consequence of it is, it's not easy, but it's necessary. And again, it requires, that internal investigation. And
yeah, that's a really good point.
Absolutely.
You know, I think at the beginning, when we were introducing Jal Raghatu, we said that she's a visionary. And not only is she a visionary, but I also have to say she is incredibly talented, creative, and so well-spoken. And I mm-hmm. think that we might be lucky enough to hear some spoken word from her today. Mm-hmm. Is that right, Jal Raghatu?
Yes.
That's correct.
I'm gonna step up to the mic.
Jal, how we forwarded the contract before this session. I'm just...
yeah, our legal team is on it.
Right? They forced me to make you sign it. Yeah, I know.
I really appreciate, actually. I was so excited and humbled when you said that to me, Jal Hawi, because... You know, I love the creative work that I do, and it's really an honor to be able to share it on this platform and share it for our cause. And let me just say one thing, by the way, about poetry before I share this piece. It's the language that we've been expressing our desires for liberation, our feelings of love, and our plethora of feelings. Mm. You know, Garrisa is one of the things that Hajalu was so deeply talented at. It's a form of art that, you know, is our form of poetry. And I like to think that, you know, my inclination towards it is inspired by the connection to this in our ancestry, because it's really a wonderful and beautiful practice. So,
Dubartin and Gerartu and you today,
I'm very known for my Gerarsa, but I won't take the spotlight from Jal Raghatu, so okay.
Oh, I would not be able to compete, Jal Hawi. You cannot do that to me.
You do not want to hear it.
Are we just going to keep it in our listeners' imagination?
Exactly, yeah.
No. Listeners, demand that that is released to you.
We're gonna have an influx of messages.
Pretty much stop that noise.
How about this? If we get at least how many demands for Jal Hawi? 100. If we get 100 requests for Jal Hawi to do Gerarsa, you'll hear that in 2 weeks.
I love that idea. I love that. You know it's gonna happen, Jal Hawi. You know it's gonna happen. Jan Maro, it's actually mad that you just mentioned that line, because I was gonna do a piece that has parts of that song and get it in it. I was gonna leave it out, but because you mentioned it, it's fake. Oh, so I'm gonna add that to
that. Oh, please. Yes.
Oh, yay.
Yeah. Great minds think alike.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this is two pieces just summed together, because they kind of tell the same story. So. Sing us into the horizon. Cure us of this poison. Teach us the language of freedom. Free us from our binding demons. Tell us the stories of tomorrow. Remind us of who we are. Dobartinin gerortu enujete murtese. Dobartin hadadira. Who said that the women cannot fight? Women, mothers of men, these words sung by a mother of men, 10,000 on every end, ready to defend what was always ours. And fear tends to tower tall in times of tension, the fall not for the lies that are calling for your attention. Attend to the truth, and the truth is fear is dying in Oromia, but I see it living vivid in the eyes of the enemy. The people are speaking. They say that we will live to see the end of this, if it means the end of me. Master Plani Kesani, Himbenu, Himbenu, Lafa Akotia. Your plans for our land are foreign to us, the land of our grandmothers, the only promise we trust. So sing us into the horizon. Cure us of this poison. Teach us the language of freedom. Free us from our binding demons. And when tomorrow comes, tell us the stories of yesterday so we never forget who we are. And if it is possible on earth, we will be amongst the ones to know it. Complete liberation. It's with conviction that I know it. It will not be the work of our children to pick up bullets, to list the dead, to know no rest. Our lives will be the last ones on our line that struggle on this truth. Our voices, the last ones in our story that fight for the right to choose who I am, for who am I, if not a product of our hopes and dreams combined. And I tell you only truth when I say that my ancestors felt this too. And if it is possible on earth, we will be amongst the ones to know it. Complete liberation. It's with conviction that I know it.
Wow.
Wow.
There's only one Jarragat in this world, I'm telling you. Yes.
That was beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was absolutely soul shaking. That was so fantastically beautiful. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Oh, I'm so pleased to enjoy it.
Truly loved it. Truly loved it.
Yeah.
I feel like you can just grateful. Like feel our like real desires through that, and it really, really resonated with me. That was beautiful. Thank beautifully you. Said. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just wanted to say I'm really glad, Jalhawi, that you said that there's only one Jalragatu in this world, because I really was looking for an entry point to tell you about why I have the Jal named Jalragatu.
Oh, please
yeah,
do.
I know. Yeah. I was going to ask you that. We usually do it in the beginning, but perfect timing, yeah.
Yeah, words. So a while back, I had heard about the story of Jalragatu, who was a Oromo liberation fighter decades ago. And so there's like this infamous story about how after the TPLF came to power, the Oromo Liberation Front wanted to, because they were saying that there is no more Oromo Liberation Front or Oromo Liberation Army operating. They want to prove to the world that we're still around. So they told that Jalragatu was ordered to, I believe, kidnap an American. And so she kidnapped an American and took them to the base and fed him, gave him water, treated him like an honorable guest, as is what happens, you know, when you are a guest in Oromo in the camp of the Oromo Liberation Army. Anyway, this man left in love with Jalragatu, like, and with our movement. She told people who spoke English at the camp, teach them about our cause. And this person left, and actually there's this visual that's often described, and I heard the story again recently, and this visual was described of when he was picked up by his helicopter, she ordered her soldiers to protect his leaving. So they like circled the area, you know, all obviously armed. So you can just imagine that visual, like in an open field, her ordering these soldiers to surround the area to protect as he leaves, and he's screaming from the helicopter, "Jalragatu, Jalragatu!" And this person who I've just started to ask more questions about who this person is. I don't even know their name. I just know that they're a white American. Went on to be a huge advocate for the Oromo Liberation Movement outside of the country. And so super inspired by how if people saw the essence of what we do and who we are and what we want, they couldn't help but believe it, that it is the truth.
Yeah. Wow. Mm. I love that story.
Very powerful. Yeah. I know. That's such an incredible story. Wow.
I love that.
Thank you.
And
for
I love that,
that
that's the name that you chose.
Yeah. And you're giving it justice.
Really, that's really powerful. Yeah.
I appreciate that because I, you know, give yourself something, something to live up to that. Yeah. But yeah, she's, and she's still alive.
Wow. Amazing.
I'm definitely changing my John name because it sounds so weak compared to that right now. So
I was so curious about your John name. Jalhawi. I was really, I mean, maybe I missed the episode where you explained. How did you choose Jalhawi?
Jalhawi, I think Hawi is my nickname, and Hawi is said to be that it's a woman's name. And the rebel inside me said that, you know, I'm going to own it and, you know, walk it and live it. And here we are. So
I love that. Yeah. And by the way, it's also my second name. So I love that we have that in common as well.
Yeah. It's too many things we have in common. A birthday month and now names as well. This is, you might be my twin, you know.
I think we already confirmed that, right?
I think we're not going back there.
Our legal team said the DNA test has come back. So it's confirmed, yes.
Oh my God.
It is be an honor, John Hobie.
Likewise.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think before we wrap up, I really want to talk a little bit for our listeners about what the current status is of our independence movement. So what is your understanding of the current status? Where are we headed as a people? You know, what initiatives are happening on the ground to push for independence, to reach our self-determination?
Well, I think one easy place to begin in terms of what's happening on the ground is the fact that the Oromo Liberation Army is the strongest it's been since its inception in the 1970s. It's the largest it's been, it's the strongest it's been. And the influx of people recruiting, because no one is compelled to join the army, the influx comes from what you described, John McMuddle, earlier as the extreme escalation of this violence. And a lot of the folk joining are those who are part of the peaceful movement. So that's one really, and also seeing, you know, seeing a synergy and a symbiosis start to form between the peaceful movement and the protest movement and Waran, the armed movement, is something that, you know, we should be paying attention to because that is what's happening on the ground as well. And in terms of, like, where are we at right now, I think even if we have differences of opinion about where, like, politically, what is the solution, I think what is shared amongst the Oromo Nation is that we can't remain in the state we're currently in. Like, this can't be something that the future inherits. This level of state violence, this expectation to be something that we're not. And so I think we're really at a place of trying to imagine what comes next, and this is where the work of us making the independence reality feasible and tangible to people, normalizing it, I think adds to that conversation. I think really people, Jalhawi, you mentioned this earlier, people are really coming to that side, or realizing that it's the only option. And at the very least, if not the only option, it's gone from, you know, something that should be talked about or considered to something that really needs to be on the table. And I also think people are realizing that this is about power, that striving for independence is about putting us in a position where we can decide as a nation what we actually want, because we've never had the opportunity to decide who we are to Ethiopia, who are not to Ethiopia. There's never been an arena to make that decision as a mass. And so really, before we even get to the point of, like, an independent nation, the independence process, advocating the independence process, is like, we need to get to a place where we finally decide, and we can decide safely, and that decision, is honored, and we can protect that decision more so than it being accepted or honored by anything else. We can protect that decision no matter what that decision is, if that is independence or it's alliance or new alliances or, you know, whatever it is.
I think we're in, I really relate to everything you say, Jarhagatu, and I think we're in a very, very critical position. and point in our history. I think what Abiy has done to our people and how he has done it has made us stronger. And one thing he did is he stole democracy from us. We were so close to it. We paid so many sacrifices. And right when we almost had it, he snatched it away from us. And I think that forced our people to realize that we have to completely dismantle this empire. And I think that's where we are, because democracy is not attained easily. And in fact, even after it's attained, it's very hard to maintain. And I think the best example for that is what happened with the insurrection in the White House. One man just saying a few words could move people to commit felonies, basically. So Abiy has...
And treason.
I'm sorry?
No, I just said and treason.
And treason, exactly. And so and that's how much democracy is fragile. That's how much it's even hard to attain. But I think our people are very committed to it. And like Jarra Gattu mentioned, the amount of support Warana Bilisuma Oromo is getting is very encouraging and exciting, and is a direct reflection to what Abiy is doing to our people. So I've said it in the past on this podcast, I think 2021 is a very critical year in our history, and I really believe that something is going to come out of it, and we are in a very, very critical point. So your where our people stand is going to be the most important time now. You know, what you do and how you support and who you support is very, very valuable. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we've mentioned this a few times before as well, but the space to openly and freely organize politically towards independence doesn't really exist in Ethiopia. You know, that's the kind of activity that will get you at the very least imprisoned, and, you know, at the worst executed. So that's the kind of context that we're within. That's the kind of environment that we're contending with. The fact that doing it in, you know, an open and a sort of like a legitimate political, well, it's all legitimate, but in an open political way isn't a possibility. And, you know, Wabo is working to create that space for us. Wabo is fighting to create the space where we can organize openly, politically, freely towards an independence movement. It's, you know, Wabo is working to create that non-violent space where we can do that. That they are trying to bring us to a place where we can exist without violence, where we can, you know, pursue our goals in a peaceful manner. So Wabo is setting the foundations for us to be able to do these things in as peaceful a way as possible. And I want to kind of pick up on some of the things that Jarra Gattu said, that that we're before the sort of tangible aspects of moving towards independence. I think what's been happening in the minds of our people is the shedding of a fear-based thinking. They're shedding the fear that people in Oromia and Oromo people have been conditioned to harbor over decades and centuries. That fear-based thinking is beginning to be dismantled. Minds are truly beginning to become decolonized. And that is what's beginning to translate into these more physical, tangible progress towards independence. So I think that's one of the most profound things that has really been taking place in Oromia and amongst our people, that we've decided to remove fear from our hearts, that we've decided to sort of extrapolate the way that we think from a fear-based or from a foundation of fear and take it into a foundation of hope and opportunity and you know, vision. And that is an incredibly immense and magnificent feat in an environment where that mental psychological conditioning is the way of the land. To have been able to do that, to have been able to liberate ourselves mentally is something that is almost beyond imagination, considering the context that mental liberation has taken place within. So I think our people deserve immense, incredible credit for having been able to do that. And it's a testament to how strong-willed, how determined and how driven the Oromo people are to attain their ultimate goal of achieving Abba and Hadabi Yuma. Or reinstating Abba and Hadabi Yuma. We're not achieving it from a place where it hasn't existed. We're just, you know, working towards reinstating
reclaiming what was
Our reality. So that's something that I find extremely admirable, particularly in this, you know, generation of Gueros and Carres, that they've been able to do that is mind blowing to me.
Beautiful point, Jalango. Really quickly, guys, what would you say are our key obstacles right now, and what should our listeners do to get involved and to support Oromia's independence movement?
I think that the idea that the Abiy administration is pushing and is really like, you know, is structuring propaganda around that, like the central idea of we're already free, like this constant repetition of, you know, you don't need to be fighting for your freedom anymore. And I think that it's an obstacle, but the fact that in the face of that, like, blatant lie that this administration is trying to, this, I don't want to call it an administration, this, you know, this mafia, no, I'm not going to lie, are trying to...
Yeah, that's
a big one, but yeah.
Yeah. Are trying to, like, ingrain in people's minds that you're already free. There's nothing to fight for anymore. If the fact that in the face of that, people are still striving for and achieving this awakening, like they're really realizing just everything you just said, Jalango, I'm not gonna repeat a thing, just are stepping into that decolonization. But it's a confusing reality for us, because we have a task of like creating a narrative, not just for ourselves, but for a political region, for a political world order that says that Oromos require a freedom that looks like this independence, or a freedom that looks like this self-determination and sovereignty. It's a confusing reality to look at Oromos across the country, across this current quote-unquote government, to see them go, we're already free. There's nothing, like, it's just these people on the sidelines, you know, yelling at this thing. But yeah, so that comes back to our narrative building work. That comes back to making sure that we get really loud. Another challenge, I think, is reorientating our diaspora advocacy to be able to speak to this agenda. And I think it's possible to do in all of the contexts that we do our advocacy. We've been doing it on social media, cool, check. We can do it with local representatives. We can do it in lobbying. We can do it in so many other ways, all other ways where we think we can only talk about Ethiopian government is abusing us, stop the Ethiopian government from abusing us. These two narratives can't actually really go together. We can't beg the West or allies or anyone else to stop the Ethiopian government from abusing us, and at the same time make or describe the reality that the Oromo people are actually fighting and going to achieve their self-determination by continuing to fight for it. And that's a reality that you need to begin to back. We need to strengthen these narratives in these other contexts. And it's possible to do so if we strategize, if we think together, and also if we build the courage to make this our language and realize that even if you are not for, I think this is something really that I really want to hone in on. Even if you do not want to see an independent Oromia, okay? Like, if you're not that person, there you must realize that in terms of power and how it works, being able to protect your borders, secure your borders, is integral to being able to negotiate any political arrangement that means that you're safe from violence in our context. And so even if that's the multinational, even if that's what you want, we do have a point in common here. And that's that the Oromo people must decide for themselves who they are to Ethiopia and who they're not to Ethiopia. And to do that safely, they must be able to protect their borders, sovereign from the Ethiopian military, because Ethiopian military was designed to kill, exploit and abuse us. And so, yeah, I think that in our advocacy context, we've got work to do.
And I think, just to add on to what Jarragatu said, the entity that will enable to protect us is Wobo.
Mm-hmm.
So what our listeners can do, and not only our listeners, but even beyond what Oromos can do, first is support Wobo. Mm-hmm. Because Wobo is determined mm-hmm. to do all the work for you. They just need your support, mainly financial support, but also your mm-hmm. support in narrative as well. So my suggestion is three things. One, support Wobo, because they're the answer. Two, don't be a speed bump. I always say this, just stay away. Don't drag the struggle, or don't drag the people that are trying to make a difference for the purpose of democracy. And then last but not least, Tokuma. We need to be one. We have to be able to make a fist. A fist is stronger. And I don't care if you are from Wallagga, Arsi, Bale, Jimma, Borana. I don't care where you're from. You are Oromo at the end of the day. And you have to come to that realization, and you have to learn and find ways to work with your people to make sure that we are free and independent from any rule. And we are able to determine our own rights. That's our goal. So three things. Support Wobo. Don't be a speed bump. Work on your Tokuma with your people.
And please do that by Saturday.
Done.
I know. Someone was like, okay, what date should I put that down for in my planner? So I'm just helping you out.
So what would I do without Jalmaro? You
know, Saturday at 4 p.m. your time.
That's a big vibe.
Please, thank you.
Oh, God. I love that. I really, really love that. Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that. I think, you know, Jal, Ragato and Jalha, we covered it really nicely. Fund Wobo, Fund Wobo, Fund Wombo, number one. Number one, and again, number one. And the second thing we can do in the diaspora is diplomacy and advocacy. Those are the two things that we can do. And just as Jal Ragato said, we have to start connecting the idea that sovereignty and independence is what's going to end our oppression and our suffering to the rest of the advocacy work that we do. These things need to become tied together. These things need to become connected, as one is the answer to the other. And engage as much as we can as part of the diaspora in diplomacy work, starting to build relationships with countries, with nations, with especially in the local environment for Oromia, you know, planning and dialogue with neighbors to avoid border conflict, like Jadrakatu said, and just engage in robust diplomatic work. Those are the things that we can do. And anyone who feels like that's not enough, and, you know, they want to jump on a fly and hop into the bushes and do the real work on the ground, I won't stop you. Do your thing. But yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that was really good summary from all of you. I think the one thing I would add, as we mentioned earlier on, the massive propaganda campaign, I think, is huge. And by the way, the reason we say disinformation and misinformation are two different things. Mm-hmm. Disinformation is deliberate. It's the deliberate spreading of false information, whereas misinformation is when potentially well-meaning people then continue to spread that propaganda. And it's important that we note that it is a disinformation campaign, and that it's perpetuated through misinformation of some well-meaning people as well as some bad actors. And it's really important, you know, all of you, regardless of whether you consider yourself to be someone with connections or influence. We all have influence in our own circles. We all have our own contacts and people that we interact with. And I would challenge every single one of our listeners to be that voice of reason, to take it upon yourself to be up to date and be educated and follow diverse outlets. I mean, I think it's healthy for anyone to have skepticism when they view information. You know, don't just take journalistic information at face value, right? You have to question for yourself, what is the intention of the person who's giving me this information? What are different outlets saying? What does an independent source say that's different from a state source? And why is there such a big discrepancy? What is the motivation behind this? That is what I would challenge everyone to do. And regardless of, I guess, your level of involvement, this is something anyone can do at any point starting right now. And it's really important in terms of the narrative and also making sure that we don't lose people to propaganda. So that's really important, I would say. Yeah, but we want to hear from you all too. So give us a call on our hotline. Leave us a voicemail or send us a text. We are at +1. That's just for Jalango. if you're outside of the U.S., 430-755-0727. You can also send us a voice note in our Instagram DMs or Facebook. Both of those are Team Free Oromia. Yeah, call us, leave us a message. Tell us what you think about our conversation today. Tell us what you think about a Free Oromia, about the podcast. Give us feedback, questions, suggestions for future topics. We are here for it. And, you know, a couple of times during this episode, we've talked about Haj Alu Hundesa, our beloved martyred artist and activist, the legend. And, you know, I think his legacy has fueled a lot of our efforts, especially, you know, since he was assassinated, for sure. And Kalo Media, one of the independent Oromo media outlets and a previous recipient of our Sabonuma Award of the Week, has recently put out a documentary about the cover-up surrounding Haj Alu's assassination. So please do check that out. You can find them on YouTube, Kalo Media, K-E-L-L-O, or on Facebook. Oromo Protest has also uploaded that documentary onto Instagram TV. So you can also go to instagram.com/Oromo Protest, go to the IGTV tab there. There is a version with English subtitles. So if you don't speak Afan Oromo or Amharic, because there are also versions in Afan Oromo and Amharic, you can check it out with the English subtitles. You know, Haj Alu's assassination really shocked us, and it was just stunning in the most horrible way. As you all may recall, our first Sabonuma Award was given to Haj Alu. And I think, you know, that wasn't the end of us honoring him. It's, you know, he was kind of like that blueprint for what it means to be a Sabona. I think we would all agree on that. You know, he, you know, every day he advocated for the Oromo people through his work, knowing that that could lead to the end of his life at any moment, just like the same has happened to Oromo artists before him. He paid the ultimate sacrifice for standing with his people in the face of grave danger. And we're really thankful to Kalo Media for exposing the Ethiopian government's likely involvement in the assassination itself, and its definite involvement in the cover-up. And, you know, again, we really refuse to allow this propaganda to continue. And so we're really appreciative of Kalo Media's investigation and sharing the evidence that they have to really expose what's really going on here. And I think although Haj Alu is just one person, not only did he inspire many people, but his assassination was not just an attack on him as an individual, it was an attack on the Oromo Nation. So thank you to Haj Alu, and thank you to the Kalo Media team for coming out with this.
Yeah, huge thanks. It's a really shining example of some, you know, brilliant investigative journalism. You know, they've been really brave in their truth seeking. So this is a documentary that none of us can miss. You know, if we care about the truth of what happened to Haj Alu, and if we care about getting him some semblance of justice. Real justice can never be achieved because his life has been taken away. But we have to at least strive for the partial justice that that we can achieve by finding those who are responsible and punishing them appropriately. So, yeah, great work by Kalo, and thank you endlessly to them for doing this.
You know, I just couldn't, I still have to watch the documentary, and mentally I just couldn't do it. I still struggle listening to Haj Alu's music because, I don't know, I'm a father, and I just think of his children, and I think of, you know, what his family's going through, and it's such a huge sacrifice, and it just breaks my heart that he's no longer with us. But I'll definitely work up the courage and eventually watch that documentary. But I'm sure Kalo Media has done always been standing on the right side of history and doing good journalism work since their inception. So very mm-hmm. grateful for what they've done.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And on that note, we actually would like to award our Sabonuma Award of the Week to Tilahu Niami, who, if you have seen the documentary, you would have heard his testimony. He is currently imprisoned and has been brutally tortured and kept in really horrible, horrible conditions for months. And throughout all that, he has refused to submit to the government's demand for his false testimony. He has refused to, you know, basically the government has been demanding that he confess to being ordered to assassinate Haj Alu by different Oromo individuals and groups. And he has refused to do that. And he stated in the documentary that he would rather die than be accused of murdering Haj Alu. And so I think, you know, in the face of torture, in the face of fearing his life, his family's life, this man has, you know, really just upheld his morals and refused to succumb to what the government is trying to get him to do. So
he's really a hero. I don't know if you can still hear me. And I was just thinking as you were describing what he sacrificed, about what we were saying earlier about the fact that we're in a war zone. Like, what more do we need to see that when the truth is spoken, or, you know, a person wants to protect their humanity, their dignity, and they're, you know, tortured, and now, you know, Tilahu Niami, we don't know his location after the documentary was released. You know, he was taken, you know, away for perhaps more torture, most likely more torture or worse. But more of a war zone, you know, can one really be in? So he's mm-hmm. he's really a hero in the context of people who go to war and sacrifice their lives. You know, Tilly Hunyam is really a hero.
You know, our last episode was on Oromo political prisoners and their plight, episode 12. And one thing we repeatedly discussed was how our names are important and how our name lives on even after we pass. And I think Tlahun recognizes that in a way that he doesn't want his name to be attached with the death of Acalo. He doesn't want, and he's willing to die for that. He's basically willing to die with a clear name than you know, not suffer, you know, while he's alive. And it's a tough choice to make, you know? And that is the kind of choices that Oromos are left with in Ethiopia. They have to abandon who they are and their identity, basically in order to survive. And that is the type of situation we have to relieve our people from. We are at war. Mm-hmm. There is no denying that. So big ups to him. And I'm sorry that he's in such a position that he has to make that choice. But he really made the correct choice and did not align himself with this horrible mafia of a government. So I wish him... I wish him peace, I wish him strength, and I wish him freedom, honestly.
Yeah, I think the best thing that, you know, we can do for someone like him who has completely risked everything to speak the truth and to spread that truth is to continue to say his name and, you know, because I think that's the best way that we can repay him. And really the closest that we could do to trying to protect him in this case. So, yeah. Thank you. Thank you to Tlahun Yami.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for your bravery. Yeah. We honor you for your bravery.
Definitely. And on that note, to wrap up, we wanted to play a song by an artist, Andualem Gosa, who has very beautifully honored Haj'alu. He's a young Oromo artist, and one of his recent songs speaks very profoundly to what Haj'alu will forever mean to our people. And so we're going to leave you with that song. Here is Siegen Dattabe by Andualem Gosa.
See. hawashi murse desi murur se awashi ajengo jaba ilmo dugati ajengo dukuru kapso ajengo jaba ilmo dugati ajengo dukuru kapso ajengo jaba ilmo dugati ajengo dukuru kapso kapsi sa sabni sidam gachalu sipsi desataloni ri adula adu boro urjigalesa kalchi hunda chalu wayoka obadu kana ipsa jirrajedu fulle bayedu kana ipsa ajengo jaba ilmo dugati ajengo dukuru kapso ajengo jaba ilmo dugati ajengo dukuru kapso ajengo jaba ilmo dugati ajengo kayotalu ajengo jaba ilmo dugati ajengo dukuru kapso ajengo jaba ilmo dugati ajengo dukuru kapso
patakiya fani kalina inkurkuram nom bichanku jenedue kayoda
Thank you all for listening to this episode. Thank you, Jal Hawi, Jal Ango, and thank you so much for joining us today, Jal Raggatu. It was such a pleasure. Every time we speak, I learn so much from you. So I can't wait to have you back.
Yeah,
I can't wait to listen to this episode when it's released.
That spoken word portion was like one of my favorite moments in our history of the TFO podcast. I'm telling you, it was very, very special.
Yeah,
and thank you
absolutely.
For you taking the time to join us and for you to take the time and share with us that very raw piece. It really meant a lot to us. So we appreciate you. Definitely.
Thank you. Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be with you. And I also learned a lot and I can't wait to come back. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for all you do as well.
Y'all should give yourselves the Sabonu Maro down the line or something.
I just say, if
wouldn't
we give
that
it
be
to
awkward?
Jal Maro, we're good. Right. You know, the rest of us are just, just riding her wave, basically. So,
side pieces.
No. All right, everyone. Have a wonderful week. We'll be back next Thursday, so... Thank you all.
Awesome. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye. Bye.
Oromia.